You're listening to DTFHN for August 5th, 2026. I'm your source available host, Jack Haxman. We are your daily tech feed for Hacker News. A website W comment is always someone explaining that you reinvented something from 1974. Today is about the people who hand you the schematics instead of the invoice. Crack it open. In 1970 Lux, the Homebrew Computer Club met in a garage in Menlo Park. Then an auditorium at Slack. No membership fee. One rule that wasn't really a rule: if you brought something, you shared the schematics. That room produced the Apple I, the Sol 20, a dozen companies and 100 careers. And the thing that made it work wasn't the venue or the agenda. It was that everybody there had already built something. You didn't come to watch. Cal Patterson and Oleg Patsechin run a Hacker News meetup in Helsinki. Coffee shop, Central Helsinki. Sunday mornings, 10 to noon, every 6 to 8 weeks. Sometimes, beers instead. Completely unofficial. No connection to Y Combinator whatsoever, which they state up front, twice. Here's the design decision worth admiring. To join, you need a non-Greenname account in 64 Karma or more. That's it. Greenname on Hacker News means your account is new. 64 Karma means you've posted things other people found worth upvoting. A comment, a link, some small contribution to the commons. It is a deliberately low bar. Almost anyone who has genuinely participated clears it. And the rule can be waived if somebody in the group already knows you. What that filter actually selects for is posters. Not readers. Not status. Not seniority. Not employer. Just. Have you put something into the pool you're about to drink from? The question nobody asks about community design is this one. What are you actually filtering for? Most gatekeeping pretends to filter for quality and really filters for who you already know. This filter is legible, public, and cheap to clear. It also can't be bought. The comments are the proof it works. Somebody wants to organize one in Rome. Somebody else asks about Cologne. Two people say they'd love to come, but they mostly lurk, so they don't qualify. And neither of them is bitter about it. They just know what the threshold is, and they know exactly how to cross it. Go post something. 64 Karma is maybe an afternoon of engaging honestly with a thread you care about. The barrier isn't the karma. The barrier was always the same as it was in that Menlo Park garage. Bring something. The protocol here is about 40 words long. It ports to any city with a coffee shop. Rome, Cologne, Tallinn, wherever you are. Nobody has to grant you permission, because there's nobody to ask. Now, stateless MCP, I'd written this one off 6 months ago, and it just pulled me right back in. Tuesday, a spec drop that made a whole category of infrastructure disappear, and the top comment on Hacker News was, roughly, congratulations, you invented RPC over HTTP. Somebody else added that you two, fellow web developers, are smart enough to work at Anthropic. Let me argue their side for a minute, because they're not wrong about the facts. MCP 2.0. Formally the 2026-07-28 Model Context Protocol spec takes a two-request handshake and collapses it into one post. You used to initialize a session, get back an MCP session ID, then send your actual tool call carrying that ID. Now you send three headers. Protocol version method name and the JSON body and you're done. That is JSON RPC in an envelope. The commenter's saying, it's just rest get corrected in the thread by someone pointing out it's RPC. And the distinction matters. And they're right, too. Ferris even shows up with a Cloudflare worker called MCP Clock, proving you could already do stateless calls with a single curl before the spec blessed it. So why is this the most significant change since launch? Because of what the session ID was costing you. A session ID means server-side state. Server-side state means sticky routing. The same session has to land on the same back-end machine, which means your load balancer needs affinity. Your autoscaler can't drain nodes cleanly, and every serverless deployment fights the protocol instead of running on it. Delete the session, and an MCP server becomes a stateless endpoint you can put behind the exact same infrastructure you already run for everything else. One commenter puts it perfectly. In retrospect, stateful MCP was clearly wrong. Here's the part I find genuinely lovely. Simon Willison built 3 implementations in a week, including MCP Explorer, a CLI you can run right now with UVX. No install pointed at any MCP server. And it lists the tools. The complexity floor dropped low enough that a weekend is enough. And the reason he came back to MCP at all is the sharp bit. Handing an agent a shell and curl is powerful and terrifying. MCP tools are auditable, constrained, and simple enough that a small model on your laptop can drive them. Boring protocols are what let modest hardware do real work. The unglamorous fix. Deleting the state is the one that puts the tooling in reach of everyone running local. Different scale entirely now. Let's leave the laptop size tooling behind and go all the way up, and because gravity, it turns out, is still worth asking about. I built a settings screen once that started with one toggle. Reasonable toggle. Then someone needed an exception for a rare case, and the exception needed its own sub-preference. And 18 months later, there were 41 controls in a search field to find them. Nobody decided that. Nobody would have approved it if you'd shown them the final screenshot on day one. That's the piece Marsum Witchery names in this essay, gravity. His claim is that in user interfaces, there is no middle notch. Zero is stable. Infinity is stable. Everything between is a slope you're already sliding down. The examples are painfully concrete. Chrome's right-click menu started as 1-4. New window or new tab, it's 3 now. Screenshotting on iOS was save or delete. It's 5 options every single time, even if you only ever want one. The mechanism is what makes this an engineering problem and not a design complaint. Digital interfaces are infinitely extensible. There's always room for one more button. Doesn't fit? Make it smaller. Looks bad small? Add a scroll bar. Scroll bar feels wrong? Overflow menu. The medium never pushes back. And the second half of the argument is sharper. A bad decision isn't just precedent, it's code. Code that gets copied, forked, imported, reused. Witchery says existing code always had gravity, even before language models. He's being generous. We just handed the copying step to a machine that's extremely good at pattern matching, whatever's already there. Run this forward. Every team that adds the fourth option has an airtight argument. Why should we do the thinking the team that added the third one didn't do? The logic is circular by construction, and the cost. Pick's law, the extra half second of decision load, the accumulated weirdness. Lands in a no man's land no team owns. Nobody is on the hook for the whole, so the whole degrades. The escape isn't taste. Taste doesn't survive a reorg. The escape is architecture. Limits you can't root around and the ability to fork when someone roots around them anyway. That's the quiet advantage of open systems here. Chrome's context menu is Google's to bloat. When a project is actually yours, a maintainer who says no has standing. And if they say yes to the wrong thing, you have a copy of the source, and a very sharp pair of scissors. The gap between a slope and a cliff is who holds the delete key. Moving on. The system prompt is a minimal skeleton, 6,000 tokens of scaffolding, and Pi's is a fraction of that. The post frames it as a philosophy. I'd call it a load-bearing detail because it's the one thing in this entire category that's actually falsifiable. Here's the observation worth pulling on. The article argues Pi handles context better because it doesn't stuff the window with harness-specific instructions. And a commenter, quietly, asks the only question that matters. How? It still sends the system prompt. It still ships augents.md, the skill definitions. The whole conversation. Minimalism at the top of the window doesn't shrink the bottom of it. That's a good question. It deserves an answer with a number in it. But there's a second detail, and it's the interesting one. Another commenter notes that both Codex and Claude have trained their models to their harnesses. Sit with that. The scaffolding isn't just prop text anymore. It's baked into the weights. The model was tuned to expect a particular shape of instruction, a particular tool call format, a particular idea of what a session looks like, which means the harness stopped being a wrapper and became part of the product. Apply the due diligence test. If the model is trained to the harness, and the harness is the benders, and the weights are the benders, then your workflow is a tenant in a building you don't own. Everything works beautifully until the objective function changes. Until the tool format shifts in a point release. Until the tuning optimizes for a use case that isn't yours. You won't get a migration guide. You'll get a change log. And someone is already routing around it. Igor Warzocha is extracting Codex's shapes and porting them into Pi. That's a person with a name on GitHub, taking the parts that work and putting them somewhere they can be modified. Not a manifesto. A repo. The rest of the thread is people disagreeing about defaults. Too minimal, too fiddly, too much assembly required. One person has Pi running headless on a server, wrapped in an XMPP client, so agents can talk to each other over a protocol from 1999. That's not a feature anyone shipped. That's what happens when the surface is exposed. The complaint that a tool ships too little is a complaint you can fix in an afternoon. The complaint that a tool ships too much, it's a complaint you'll file and wait on. So, what happens when someone exposes the surface for content moderation itself? Story 5. Mistral just open-weighted a 3B multimodal safety model. Take the strongest case against this. A safety classifier is a censorship engine. Mistral shipping one under Apache 2.0 doesn't democratize speech. It democratizes the machinery for suppressing it. 3 billion parameters, 16 gigabytes, and now, any platform operator can run an automated arbiter of acceptable content at scale. Cheaply, the counterargument goes further. Baking a taxonomy of harm into weights was at least legible. You could audit the categories. Shieldstrahl accepts freeform policy at inference time, which means the policy is invisible, unversioned, and changeable by whoever holds the prompt. That argument fails on the second half, and the failure is instructive. In 1996, the W3C published PIC, the platform for internet content selection. Paul Resnick and Jim Miller's design decoupled the rating vocabulary from the filtering software. Anyone could publish a label bureau. Anyone could choose which one to trust. The architecture was explicitly neutral about who defined harm, because the authors understood that a single fixed taxonomy encoded into infrastructure is a policy decision disguised as a technical one. Shieldstrahl is that decoupling. 30 years later in a different substrate. The model reads an instruction block, a yes or no query, and a document. It returns the softmax over the yes and no logits. A continuous score, not a label. One forward pass. The taxonomy lives in the prompt, which means it's text, which means it's reviewable, diffable, and version controlled by whoever runs the deployment. Compare that to the alternative currently shipping, a proprietary endpoint with an undisclosed category list. Updated silently. Appealable never. The objection about invisible policy applies precisely to the thing this replaces. The benchmarks say it matches guard models up to 7 times its size on text safety and sets state-of-the-art on multimodal. Trained on heterogeneous public datasets that disagree about labels and conventions, reconciled into one question answering frame. One commenter on Hacker News wrote that they'd wanted to build an image sharing platform and stop. Because the moderation obligation was insurmountable for one person. That's the actual effect here. The compliance floor that made social software the exclusive property of companies with trust and safety departments just dropped to a single 16-gigabyte card. Another commenter suggested the name SafeStro. They're right, but Mistro got the license correct, and that's the part that compounds. Moving on. What does it mean for a color space to be honest about its own limits? Someone posted a show HN this week. A custom color space for skin tones. Not a palette. Not a swatch grid. A three-dimensional volume with a sampling function, and about 40 lines of Python that turn a point inside a sphere into an RGB triple. Sample uniformly, get a plausible human being. The whole thing is a page you can view source. Follow the premise all the way down, and it gets uncomfortable in a productive way. If a finite palette excludes people, and it does, then the fix is more values. Emoji says 5. A makeup brand says 50. A character creator throws up its hands and offers 16 million, which is the same as offering nothing, because a raw RGB picker is a hardware spec, not a human one. The author's argument is that the correct number lives somewhere between several and several million, and the only way to find it is to describe a region rather than enumerate points. Push further. Any bounded region has a boundary, and a boundary excludes. The author knows this. The equations are labeled good enough, deliberately, to keep the limitations at the forefront. That phrase is doing real work. It's a builder refusing to let a useful approximation get mistaken for an authority. There's a whole section reflecting on the related resources this was built from, and a commenter singled it out. I wish more people would show this kind of reflection. Another commenter noticed greens and blues and purples inside the volume. That's the honest failure mode of a smooth mathematical shape fitted over a messy biological distribution, and it's visible because the math is visible. Compare that to how skin tone gets decided at scale. Inside a standards committee or a company's product meeting in a spreadsheet you will never see. Those systems have boundaries too. You just can't inspect them. The difference isn't rigor. It's whether anyone outside the room can check the work and improve it. Someone in the thread had already been plotting foundation shade data into OCLAB and came back with it. That's the loop. Publish the math. Publish the doubts. And the correction arrives from a stranger with a dataset. 40 lines and a sphere. Go depict a diverse world. Now, memory for AI agents that cost 0 tokens to operate. Story 7. Pause. 0 mem. Here's why this one's fun. 0 tokens. That's the claim in the title, and it's worth stopping on, because every memory system built for agents in the last 3 years has worked the same way. You finish a conversation. You send the whole thing back to a model, and you ask it to write down what mattered. That summarization step costs money, costs latency, and the part nobody wants to say out loud, costs truth. ZeroMem's move is to delete that step. Extraction, indexing, and retrieval happen with no generative call at all. Named entity recognition, structural parsing, plain deterministic code operating on the transcript you already have. The memory isn't a paraphrase of what happened. It's what happened. Strip this to first principles. What does an agent actually need from memory? It needs to find the relevant prior context and put it back in the window. That's it. Nothing in that requirement says a language model has to be involved in the storing. We reach for one because we had one and because compression felt like intelligence. But compression by a stochastic model is lossy in a specific nasty way. It loses whatever the model didn't think was important, and it never tells you what it dropped. A commenter on the thread nailed the real contribution, and it isn't the price tag. Once an LLM rewrites an interaction, the original is gone. You cannot audit it. You cannot go back and ask what the user actually said versus what the summarizer decided the user meant. Preserve the raw trace, and that whole failure mode evaporates. Cheap is nice. Verify able is the point. Another builder pointed out that the entity recognition can be dumber than you'd expect, because agent dialogue has shape. File paths, function names, error strings, package versions, the nouns are already structured. You don't need a billion parameters to spot SRCLOR.py. And a third person is running something even more radical, caching the KV state locally and retrieving directly against it. No external vector store at all. That's someone building in their own house, on their own hardware, telling everyone how it works before there's a paper. This is the shape of the good version of the agent stack. The expensive proprietary layer turning out to be a wrapper around 40 lines of parsing that anyone can write. Every generative call you remove is one less place where someone else's model gets to decide what your history says. Read the trace. Keep the trace. 2,000 years before anyone wrote 40 lines of parsing, Hero of Alexandria was documenting his machines so others could build them. Story 8. 2,000 years before anyone could measure a vacuum, Hero of Alexandria was already engineering against what? Start with the constraint. Hero had no thermodynamics, no gas laws, no way to weigh air. What he had was an observation. Air is a body. It occupies space. It can be compressed. And if you compress it, it pushes back. That's the whole foundation. From that single premise, he built temple doors that opened when you lit a fire on the altar. Heat expands air in a hidden vessel. Air displaces water. Water fills a counterweight. The counterweight drops. The doors swing. Every step mechanical. Every step reversible. Every step explained in the text. He built a coin-operated holy water dispenser. A wind-powered organ. And the aeolipi. A sphere on bearings. Steam jetting from two bent tubes. Spinning. A reaction turbine in the first century. Described in enough detail to reproduce. That last part is what matters. Hero didn't write a monograph proving air had mass. He wrote a build manual. 78 devices, each with the vessel dimensions, the tube placement, the siphon geometry. The pneumatics is a repository. Fork it, and you get a working machine. And it stayed forked, copied by Greek scribes, translated into Arabic, carried through Byzantium, printed in Latin during the Renaissance, and then, in 1851, Bennet Woodcroft, the man who built England's patent office, of all people, put out an English edition with the diagrams intact. That chain survived because nobody owned the link. Every step in it was somebody deciding this should be readable by more people than currently read it. That's the entire mechanism of the thing reaching us. Compare that to what didn't survive. We have fragments of Ctesibius, Hero's predecessor, mostly because Hero cited him. Enormous amounts of ancient engineering are gone. Not destroyed by fire, just never copied enough times. Redundancy is preservation. Frictionless copying is why we have anything at all. One commenter noticed that diabetes comes from the Greek for siphon, named because the body passes water straight through. The medical term and the hydraulic term are the same word, because the person naming the disease had read the plumbing. Kiro's steam engine went nowhere for 17 centuries, but the document did the work. He described his machines well enough that anyone with bronze and patience could build one, and then he let it go. Kiro let his blueprints go on purpose. Story 9 is about a browser leaking your address by accident. Pause WebKit quietly spilling IP and DNS around proxies and iCloud private relay. 1994, the firewall wars. Two camps. One said filter packets. Sit at the network layer, inspect everything, know nothing about what it means. The other said build application proxies. One careful gateway pers exition. A proxy that understands FTP. A proxy that understands HTTP. Each one handwritten. The proxy camp had the better security story right up until someone invented a protocol nobody had written a proxy for. Then the traffic just walked around the gateway, because the gateway didn't know it existed. That's the MISC finding. 32 years later, wearing an iPhone. A Silo is a privacy browser for iOS. It routes web traffic through proxies using an Apple API. And every iOS Tor browser does roughly the same thing, because App Store policy requires every browser on the platform to be WebKit underneath. A user filed a bug. DNS was leaking, but only on some sites. MISC pulled the thread and found three doors. DNS prefetching resolves host names through the device's normal path, exposing your real resolver. Web opt-in-related origin requests hand the job to the operating system's credential service, which fetches a file directly and shows the site your actual IP. Web transport opens an HTTP 3 connection that simply doesn't consult the proxy config at all. Available since iOS 18, iOS 26.0, iOS 26.4. Note the pattern. These aren't old bugs. They arrived with the features. Think of a house where someone bolted a filter onto the kitchen tap and declared the water clean. Then the manufacturer adds an ice maker. Then a boiler. Then a garden spigot. Each one plumbed straight to the main. Each one shipped by people who never read the memo about the filter. The filter still works perfectly. The house is still full of unfiltered water. VPNs are unaffected because a VPN tunnels at the system level. It's the packet filter answer. It doesn't need to understand your protocol. An iCloud private relay leaks too, which is the part worth sitting with. Apple wrote the proxy layer, and Apple wrote the features that bypass it. And the mandate that every browser use WebKit means no third party can go fix it. you can only route around what you're allowed to touch. MISC shipped mitigations in Silo 1.3.1, published the technique, stood up a live proof of concept at leaks.silo.app, and told the Tor project before telling us. That's the part that works. Find it, fix it, hand everyone the test. Moving on. A deck of bird cards. You tap one on a reader, and the bird sings. That's the whole object. Hannah built it. It's called the Birdwino. And the question worth asking is why this doesn't already exist as a product you can buy for $40. Hold that. The heart of it is a Tonewino, open source audio player started by Thorsten Voss, now kept alive by a community of enthusiasts. Key++, Arduino, NFC tags, and SD card. All the documentation is in German. Hannah cloned the repo, uncommented the defines that matched her hardware. Three buttons, a potentiometer for volume, speaker on, off. And flashed it, one real code change. The volume knob, mapping expected, a max of 1023, and hers topped out around 700. She found that empirically, because the project's logging is good enough to tell you. That detail is the tell. Somebody, somewhere in that German language community, cared enough about logging that a stranger in another country could debug a potentiometer curve without asking anyone. The build itself is honest in a way that build posts usually aren't. She used the only prototyping board in the house, because she told herself this was a one-evening project, which meant scratching out traces with the knife, squeezing solder joints into a space too small for them, fixing the shorts that caused, and the Rainbow jumper wires with the nice pre-crimped connectors. Perfect for a breadboard, useless once you cut the pins off and have to solder the bare end. They just didn't take solder. More bridges, more debugging. Her advice is two sentences long. Get a bigger board, don't use those wires. Then the audio, and this is the part that makes it work. The Cornell Guide to Bird Sounds. Thousands of high-quality recordings. Purchase, loaded onto a micro SD in a directory structure so simple it's almost rude. Numbered folders. That's it. The question everyone avoids, what else are you waiting for someone to sell you? The player is open. The recordings exist. The cards are printed photos with stickers on the back. Somebody's kid is going to learn a wood thrush by ear because of this. This has been your daily tech feed for Hacker News for August 5th, 2026. This podcast is entirely AI generated. Scripts by Claude Sane 4.7. Voice by Quen3TTS. Not affiliated with Hacker News or Y Combinator. Now go write down the thing you figured out today, so somebody else doesn't have to. We'll see you back here tomorrow.